Welcome to our third podcast at Charter Central. We're very excited to be talking about school safety with a partner of ours, Dan DiBardino. Please stay tuned for an exciting conversation with Dan.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for education leaders.
Welcome to Charter Central, a podcast for educational leaders brought to you by Central Michigan University, the Center for Charter Schools, a leader in educational choice and quality. We are excited here to be hosting Dan DiBardino for our podcast. We have in studio with us Jonathan Arnberg and Janelle Brzezinski. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Welcome. We're excited to be back for our third episode. Just as some matters of housekeeping, you can find our podcast on our website, which is thecenterforcharters.org. We're also on several podcast platforms, such as Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. So make sure and subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And we're really excited to continue to offer this as a resource for our partner schools and other educational leaders throughout the state and nation.
Great, thank you. So we are here, as I mentioned, with Dan DiBardino. Dan is the Managing Director of Recon Management, which is one of our partners that we work with at the Center for Charter Schools, a contractor of ours that works in our schools. Dan is also the President and CEO of Crime Stoppers. And while he's been there for a couple years, he's been with Recon Management for 27 years. And so we are very pleased and welcome Dan here for this conversation today.
Thank you. Pleased to be here today.
So, Dan, in your work with Crime Stoppers, first of all, you know, thank you. Congratulations for your work there. That's very important to all of us. And just want to recognize your time with that organization and the value that it provides.
Thank you. I meet some wonderful people doing a lot of great things through that organization. And we certainly help. We help the community in Southeast Michigan and love doing it.
And that pairs very well with why we wanted to talk with you today, which is about the work that you do in our schools. And can you talk a little bit about the relationship that we have and how that contract benefits schools and some of the work that you do with them?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we've been a partner, a contractor, if you will, a strategic partner, we like to think, with you for a number of years. And basically what we do is we visit many of your charter schools, conducting a site or facility reviews to make sure that there is some continuity in terms of the facility, security, safety, health issues, and so forth, to make sure that they are in compliance with the standards that you guys have set up in Mount Pleasant.
Many of those standards are paralleled, aligned with what the state has required. Can you tell us a little bit about what some of your team experiences coming out of those schools, or what some of the stories that they have shared based on, you know, the state has approved this facility, and then what do they see?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the first things that a lot of my team have noticed, including myself, is how orderly the schools are, meaning how polite the students are, how welcoming the staff and administration is for us to come in and provide that kind of either guidance or review or compliance review or whatever it is. And for the most part, we find that many of the schools are in compliant. And if they're not, they ask what they might do to get in compliance, and it works out just fine.
And so school safety has been a topic, a hot topic of discussion since the mid-90s, and schools are still trying to figure out what measures and steps they need to take to ensure that the kids can learn without having to think about these other issues that we're dealing with. What are some of the challenges that you guys are seeing as you guys are out in schools, as you're visiting schools? What are some of the major topics that school leaders that might be listening in on should be thinking about with their with school safety?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and interesting, Orlando, in that we also, if I may, just to give you a little broader focus here, we not only deal with your particular charter schools, but we also deal with a lot of public schools throughout Southeast Michigan as an advisor in the security arena there as well. And the point, and the reason I make that point, is because oftentimes what we find, even though, as you've indicated, school safety and security right now is a hot topic, it ebbs and flows. It's a hot topic when unfortunately, things happen like a shooting or some other dreadful event takes place. And then it kind of subsides and, well, we'll put it away for a while and we'll see how things go. And this is not going to happen here. So the biggest thing that we really try to work with administrators with and caution them with is today, in today's environment, 2019 heading into 2020, is that security and safety protocol, et cetera, has to be as important as anything else going on operationally within that educational institution.
And you mentioned a few different examples of things that could unfortunately happen in a school environment. What are some instances of threats that schools need to be mindful of, knowing that things like a natural disaster or something that we might not think of in day-to-day that schools should be planning for and thinking ahead for?
Well, it's interesting, Janelle, because 2017, 2018, one of the things that has come up in the threat world, if you will, of schools in general, regardless of whether they're a public school, a parochial school, or just a charter school, if you will, are cyber threats, because they're a wonderful place for these informational hijackers, if you will, to gather information, simply because the majority of your students are not going to use any of their information until they're 18 or 19 years old, at which time that information's already been used, hijacked, and really fraudulently conveyed to a number of people, and then it becomes a real problem. Violence certainly is a situation. Violence meaning some act from one person to another with an intent to do some kind of harm. Obviously, bullying, even though you would think these days with all of the spotlighting that bullying has generated over the last 3, 4, 5 years, still seems to be on the increase from some of the studies that I've seen. And then, you know, there are other threats that you have to deal with as well. Parents who become irate for certain reasons involving their children. Or the other side of it, of course, is the threat of student on student as it relates to either violence, threat of violence, or those kinds of things. And also, unfortunately, you know, you have to deal these days with the whole issue of inappropriate behavior between student and student, student to teacher, teacher and student.
So what is really the thinking ahead and being prepared for this? What should schools be mindful of? Should they have a plan? What should that plan look like? And kind of what should that be forward thinking? What should be schools keeping in mind?
Well, we're going to get into, I'm going to assume later on, what the requirements now is. You know, prior to this year, there was no legislative requirements of quote unquote, a plan as the legislature has developed recently and want to put into place by January the 1st of 2020. But for the most part, the plan that we're talking about today and the plan that they're requiring is a plan that deals with any and every possible emergency situation in a particular school or in a particular set of buildings, whether that be, I don't want to start with shooting, because shooting is a disaster and it's terrible. Shooting is not the only threat we're dealing with at schools, but violence, bad weather, uninvited guests, fire, unloading, if you will, or dumping, or somehow an accident causing some kind of materials around the school that could be harmful and so forth. So they want this thing to be all encompassing with every one of those things. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But the legislative piece is very specific about what the state police now want that to look like.
So, Dan, you mentioned dumping and or accident happening near a school. I happen to have accompanied one of your staff members to a site and facility review that was right next to the railroad train depot in southeast Detroit. And so I remember the conversation and remember kind of the discussion of the of your team helping the school understand that, you know, the threats are not only within the perimeter of the facility and or the site, but you also have this railroad track next to you and semis that pass on the freeway nearby. And all of those pose a threat, a potential threat to students and or safety of the school.
Absolutely. And the other type of threat that occurs on occasion is when there is a police chase, if you will, or the police is trying, or the police are trying to apprehend someone, and that takes place around the perimeter of a school. What does a school do? If not, you have this uninvited guest, if you will, suspect, if you will, coming into the school, now putting students and staff in jeopardy and so forth. So there's a lot of things to consider, and it's one of the reasons why this emergency management plan that the state police are now requiring, based on legislative orders. One of the things that they're asking for is that a security assessment be done. Because one of the things that occurs, and you ask the question, you know, what does this emergency management plan look like? The only way for a school to determine what this emergency plan really should look like is to first identify what kind of threats they have and whether those threats are probable or not. And you have to really start from there. And that changes depending on where the school is, the location of the school, whether it be in an urban area, a country area, a city area, a major a roadway, whatever the case happens to be. And then from there, you make that decision as to what that emergency plan you build based on probable threat. And with that, you should, there's a lot of things that go into it, including not only site inspections and all that business, but also crime statistics in the area historically and all those kinds of things that go with it.
So you mentioned that that this is a new legislative requirement. So I guess if we can look a little deeper at that, I know as an authorizer in our office, we're asking schools to certainly already be thinking of that as we move here through December and some requirements that are in their master calendar of requirements. But what can you speak a little bit more to the specifics of what schools, you mentioned the January date, what schools will need to have in place there to be compliant with that legislative requirement come January?
Yeah, I can highlight it a little bit, and I would recommend that any of your listeners who are in administration should actually look at the appropriate laws and to make sure that they're in total compliance. But first and foremost, this year, the legislation called for and created the Office of School Safety and a School Safety Commission, and that's within the Department of State Police in Lansing. That's never been done before. So now there is an office within the Michigan State Police that are going to help monitor these kinds of requirements that they're asking for. They're asking that there is a liaison corrected at each school or through the school board that can actually work with, if you will, the Office of School Security state police to make sure that certain communications are being done and also to identify best practices and those kinds of things. The law requires, and now that the Attorney General operate a hotline that allows the public to submit reports regarding potential harm, potential threats, criminal action, all those kind of things, That program, as you know, is called OK to Say. Crime Stoppers of Michigan also has one that they put into the public schools, as well as OK to Say, called Project Safe Campus. And I want to go back to that, because really and truly, I know that as we talk through this thing, there's going to be some questions about what can a school do. And I really want to talk about those hotlines, because they're so very important. The emergency, the law requires that the governing body of a school, so school board or whatever it happens to be, provide the Department of State Police emergency contact information, which they never had to do before. There's some ambiguity to some of that wording, but I think reading through it, your administrators would see what they at least need to do to make sure that that is accomplished. Also, there is a situation with this emergency management plan that is required. That requires that the at each, and this is something so unique that I was a little bit surprised myself, and I've attended some of the school safety commissions in Lansing, so I've heard this coming directly from the Michigan State Police. They want an emergency operations plan for each building. So again, in your particular situation, you have one, several buildings in some cases. They want emergency plans to be developed for specific buildings. So you can imagine if you were sitting here and you were an administrator for a school district with 15 buildings, what that's going to take in order to comply with that. And each building, they want a vulnerability assessment done. That's a security assessment, if you will. They want to know procedures for threats of violence and fire, things of that nature, intruders, bomb threats, specific teacher training. All of those things are incumbent on the administration of the school and the school board or the governing body of that school with this particular emergency management plan. They want the plan to be submitted, at least to say it exists, with the Michigan Department of Education. As I indicated, they also have this liaison that they want created. They also, and this is all new, this is all brand spanking new, if you're going to do certain building renovations, that includes perhaps construction of even a new building, they expect that school administration is going to communicate with the first responders in those particular geographical areas where they operate. That includes, by the way, that they want the emergency operating plan to be reviewed also by the appropriate first responders. And I have to tell you that some of your colleagues in other universities have indicated to me and to my team that they're having some difficulty with some of the first responders responding. And they're going to have to, the schools are going to have to be persistent, because MSP, Michigan State Police, is just not going to accept, well, fire chief didn't have time to review it, so we didn't do it. They want it done, and they're quite serious about that, getting it done.
Dan, can you talk a little bit about the importance of community, particularly those first responders? Because I recall back a story. I was visiting a school a little while back, and we were talking with the administrator, and the administrator had mentioned that when they first came in to the community, they were noticing, particularly they're in an area that is, a higher amount of crime. And they had mentioned that after noticing that local schools, there was significantly less traffic that they've received from the local police department coming in and maybe driving through the parking lot, much less of that at their new school. And the administrator had mentioned that they were able to corner a police officer, local PD, and had mentioned that. And it was the assumption of that police department that the school was a private school, that a charter school was a private school, and that there was actually, they didn't have as much of a responsibility to patrol the charter school that they would a normal public school in the area. So it got me to thinking about just how important it is that the our schools have a very strong relationship with those first responders, with the police department, so that those sort of in emergency situations, things go off without a hitch.
Well, first of all, let me clarify something, that a private school is not, even if indeed they were, let's say a parochial school or a private school such as Country Day or whatever, does not mean to say that the local law enforcement agency has no jurisdiction. That's right. Quite not the case. Second of all, I believe with this newly thought out situation of administrators and school boards and so forth having to put more emphasis on school security, that we should be, administrators should be inviting in the police department. First of all, you go back to Columbine. And I don't want to bring up shootings because everybody talks shootings thinking that's the most, while it is the most horrific crime, it is not the single crime that we should be dealing with in schools. For example, there were 45, and that's 45 too many, 45 shootings year to date in 2019. 32 of those were in educational facilities K through 12. We all know how many schools there are in the United States of America. When you put that number against it, it is not the most important thing we should be talking about. Never, you know, notwithstanding the fact, obviously, that you have children that are hurt, teachers that are killed, children that are killed, and it's devastating, and I recognize that. Point I make is that now that we have spotlight put on the safety of a school, school administration, instead of waiting for law enforcement, who are overtaxed, they don't have enough manpower or woman power, that includes the fire department, they should be inviting these folks in. And I mentioned Columbine for a reason. One of the things that was pointed out in a Secret Service study after Columbine was done, and there have been several now over the years, is because the first responders had no idea what the configuration of that school looked like. So they're kind of fumbling their way mm-hmm. through it, et cetera. So from that, obviously, comes the recommendation, invite them in. Invite these. I'm not a big believer you should have the SWAT team come in and scare the hell out of all your kids. But you should have people come in to look at your facility. Here's what it is. Here's where we go. Here's how the movement of our students are. Here's when we're open. Here's when we're closed and so forth. And the same thing should be with the fire department. The other thing is when you compare a charter school, a parochial school, a private school, whatever, many of these schools, the police departments have budgets to have a school resource officer there. So there's a contingency, if you will, or a continuum of police coverage. We don't have that in the charter schools, nor do I think we need it.
And you mentioned previously, too, about the importance of some of these anonymous reporting systems. You've used examples such as OK to Say, certainly Crime Stoppers in your role there. Do you want to kind of touch back on those, the importance of those, and what schools should be mindful of how they might be able to utilize those resources?
I do. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting things about, and I hate to use it again, but I'm going to, about the studies that were done specific to school shootings was that, and the only consistency that has been found thus far, I might add, because there's no profile for school shooters, there never to this date has been, and that's, you know, it's a well-documented piece with the studies that have been done by the federal government, Department of Justice, etc. But one thing they do know for certain, that in many cases, and this occurs again in the latest Secret Service report that I think was penned in November of 2013, says that that out of all of these cases, 9 out of the 10 shooters that they studied exhibited some form of behavior that suggested that might be the way they go. So why do I say that? And to take that, you to extract that even further, once these events take place, and it might not be a shooting, it could be violent attack one student to another. It could be inappropriate behavior of one sort or another. They find that people knew about it, but nobody said anything, either because they were afraid to say something, they didn't think it was their business to say something, and people that did say something happened to do so because they said that they had what they referred to as a very strong relationship with a teacher or an administrator or somebody within the school. So you need these kinds of hotlines. First, they are anonymous or confidential, depending on which one you use. The OK to Say is a confidential line because it goes to the state police. The Crime Stopper program happens to be anonymous because it goes into an answering service out of Dallas, Texas, and then it's sent up anonymously to the appropriate people that need to have it. But these kids go home. I mean, we're many of us are parents. Kids come home, they talk about this, they talk about that. So maybe a parent wants to use it. Maybe a grandparent wants to use it. I mean, again, some of these things that go on, kids see more than administrators will ever see. Kids see more than the teachers are ever going to see. They know more than the teachers and administration know. So we need to get them involved. We need to get the parents involved, grandparents involved, friends of the school involved, so that everybody has access to these particular 800 numbers or hotlines to be able to provide safely and confidentially the information that could help the administration resolve a problem.
And the Center for Charter Schools has certainly been supportive of these efforts and resources and making sure schools do know of these resources. One example of that is the OK to Say program has some very nice high-quality signs that we have provided in the past for our partner schools to hang up. We certainly will continue to do so. So if schools are interested for more information, certainly contact our office. We'd be happy to support you in making sure that your students and families in your building are aware of those resources and the signage needed to share that.
And if my memory serves me correctly, we do have those available at our annual conference, at which time we do share them with our schools to ensure that they have those signs available to them. You mentioned teacher training earlier and ensuring that you have protocol in place for that. Is there something specific that administrators should be looking for? Is there a specific training? Is there mandated training? Or what should that look like? How should they be approaching that thought process?
Orlando, interesting question, because there is no mandated training as we speak. However, the recommendations that I've read when going to this Michigan State Police meetings, that are being directed by the Office now of School Safety and Security, they're talking about some mandated training. But and again, to me, based on what we now know about school safety, none of this should be mandated anyway. We should be, as administrators, as adults, as responsible citizens, we should be taking care of this without legislative action, okay? But that being said, if there were any particular things that I think should be handled and things we see that aren't necessarily in schools in general, I'm not necessarily saying in your particular schools, but just in the educational world itself, de-escalation's a big one. You know, what do you do when you're in a you're a teacher and you're in a situation where you have a kid that has exploded, or two kids are exploded, or two kids at a lunch period that are going to kill each other? What do you do? What do you say? How do you do that? Is there an emergency response team available through the staff, and are they trained to do what? What do you do if five kids are in the hallway fist fighting, for example? You have to have some plan of attack. Probably the most important thing, and I think we all know this, that when you talk about violence in the school, regardless of what that violence may be, from fighting to bullying, right up to shooting, if you will, there is this continual discussion, and rightly so, about mental health. We all know that mental health needs, although they've grown, the government, if you will, at every level has diminished services, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as an aside, I have to tell you, I was with the some of the people from the Wayne County Sheriff's Department the other day, and they classify the Wayne County jail as the largest mental health facility in the county. And it's true. I mean, it really is true. A point I make to that is that we should at least be able to train our teachers, our administrators, and so forth, to identify some kind of mental health needs, if you will, either by behavior or by talking or by some art that a kid may do, or the fact that a kid is socially inept in a room, be it a boy or girl, doesn't really make any difference. Perhaps they're having problems at home. All of these things tend to cause kids to, as we know, react. And oftentimes, unfortunately, some of that reaction is taking place at on the school property. So if our teachers are observant of behavior, if they ask the right questions, if they listen to the answers they're getting, they may know what to do in terms of getting people to some help when they may need it.
That's helpful. And hopefully that'll give a starting point for teachers and administrators if they're not already down the path thinking about this. What about board members? Policies, procedures, what should be their thought process as they continue down this path, assuming, hoping that they're not down this path already?
Well, I think a very good question, and I would sum it up simply by saying this. Board members should be asking themselves, first of all, security and safety should be on every agenda. That's number one. Number two, the question should be, do we have a holistic program? Holistic meaning from the curb into the classroom and everything in between. And our holistic program, does it work? Does it work meaning, yeah, we have a program. Okay, do we have an emergency response team for the school? Yes. Well, what are their responsibilities? What are they supposed to do? Well, we don't know because we haven't trained to that. So a holistic program that works, and then most importantly, along with that, does the holistic program from curb to classroom and everything in between, does it address all probable threats? So we go back to what we talked about earlier. If you don't know what your threats are, how can you possibly protect yourself or your students? We know that if you wear a seatbelt, when all of us leave here today, we're protecting ourselves against injury if, God forbid, we have a car accident. If you didn't know that, and by the way, I'm at the age we didn't know that, we didn't have seatbelts, right? We know that now. Same thing has to apply to a program. So I think that administrators, school board people, and people who have governance responsibility for schools need to continue to probe that and say, does it work? Where does it work? How do I know it works? Show me something other than, yeah, it works. Okay, we're good. And then I think teachers should be the same thing. I know that I was in a school recently, not one of yours. Some of the teachers had come out of the Detroit Public Schools. And as you sure all know, the Detroit Public Schools has its own police department. So obviously they have a lot of protocols, procedures, and so forth that they use. They were at a private school. This was a Catholic private school. I was having a meeting there, actually a training session there, and the biggest complaint was they went from a very controlled, holistic program to a school in the suburbs that had nothing, and they were concerned about it. They were concerned about their safety, even though they're in the suburbs, and they were less concerned when they were in the middle of a major city.
Dan, fortunately, many of the threats that schools receive turn out to be hoaxes, mm-hmm. right? They may be a student that is unhappy and doesn't want to go to school, must miss a test or things like that. But obviously that still has the same disruptive effect on the school day. But in addition, there are some severe repercussions for that student oftentimes. I know some of them can be charged with terrorism or things like that, and they can be charged as an adult and go away to prison for a long time. So how is it that we can do better in deterring students in the classroom from making these types of threats and these types of hoaxes, and they can understand what those repercussions are and what the impact that those threats can have on the school?
Well, I think the first thing, of course, has to be, and I think that's what the law enforcement community is really trying to do, is to say we are going to severely punish these kids that are making all of these threats. The last threat occurred just yesterday in one of the public schools in the suburban area down in Detroit. So they're making really some really examples out of these kids. I think kids need to understand it. More importantly, I think parents need to understand it and to have them recognize that if your kid calls in a bomb threat, if your kid calls in a threat by creates a threat, social media, etc., here's what's going to happen to them, and we're not backing down, and there should be no agreement at the court to reduce charges or anything else. I think along with that, schools have to do better with a protocol of threat assessment, and they don't do very well with that. What do we do with the threat? So I say to you, I'm going to get up and punch you right in the mouth. How do you know that that it's a real threat? How do you know I'm not just kidding? What do you do? What's the protocols that you follow? And in some cases, many schools don't have any such protocol in place.
And Dan, we've really appreciated having your expert advice and insight here today. And as we're in our third episode here, we've made it a standing tradition here at the podcast that as we have all of our conversations relate back to education and the importance of education, we always like to ask our guests about their favorite teacher that they had when they were in school. So I guess we look to you for sharing your story and insight about somebody that stood out to you and had an impact in your life.
Well, I do. His name was Rich Coletta. God rest his soul. He's now gone. I went to St. James Catholic High School in right outside of Philadelphia, and he was a biology teacher, and he was a rough, tough guy. Stood about 5 feet tall, and he could really give you a shot if you weren't paying attention. But what I liked about Rich Coletta, and many of us did. I just went to our 50th anniversary reunion, and we still talk about Rich Coletta till this day because he pushed us as a teacher. He was well aware of the fact none of us wanted to be in a biology class. None of us. We didn't know what was happening, what was going on, and could care less. But he made it interesting. He just pulled you into his world, if you will, and made us find an interest in it, and also at the same time made us very confident, because I think a lot of us were didn't like it because we didn't think we were good at it, didn't understand it, etc. And he made it appealing so that you really did appreciate it and understood it, and I think that brought out our confidence. So he was a good guy, and we really enjoyed him. A lot of us tried to get in his class during the course of high school, for sure.
Well, we want to thank Dan DiBardino for joining us today. Dan is the Managing Director of Recon Management Group, one of our strategic partners at Central Michigan University. He's also the President and CEO of Crime Stoppers. And as you can imagine, we could have sat here and chatted all afternoon because a very engaging guest. And so, but we want to say a big thank you to you for coming in, chatting with us, and look forward to seeing you again in the near future.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I'm very, very impressed over the fact that Central Michigan University has always been interested in the safety and security of their schools, their staff, their students, and it's very impressive, and I'm delighted to be part of that. And I also want to let your listeners know that I think they're well aware of the fact from the information we send to your office, they can call us anytime for no charge whatsoever to discuss something that they may have or need some information on any time at our office.
We appreciate your partnership, Dan. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So that was a great conversation with Dan DiBardino from the Recon Management Group. Did you guys enjoy that conversation?
Yeah, certainly an incredibly important topic, the safety of our students and all of our partner schools and certainly schools throughout the nation. It should be of the utmost importance of everyone through the administration, the boards, and the teachers in those schools. And I know certainly they would feel that way, that the safety of their students are important. So we hope that provided some great resources and insights from Dan of things that they could be mindful of to ensure they have that safe school setting.
Yeah, it's such an interesting subject that I honestly could have talked to Dan for the rest of the day. So many things that I don't know a lot about, and I'd love to hear more, particularly as a fairly new father and thinking more and more about the importance of school safety for children. So.
Well, and safety is something that I'm sure we're all kind of consumed with on a day-to-day basis, and just reminds me that, having the holiday behind us and the holidays before us, I'm very giving thanks for making it through the Thanksgiving season and looking forward to the upcoming holiday break. How do you guys anticipate spending some of that time?
Yeah, and certainly the holidays being a refreshment of kind of getting some time away for everyone. So we hope that all of our partner schools, certainly all of our staff, will be enjoying that time with their families and taking time to give thanks. As you mentioned, as we came out of this Thanksgiving holiday and move into the remainder of the holiday season. So we hope that schools will be taking that time away and enjoying the time with their family. And I know certainly that all of us will be doing that as well.
I'll be spending some family time, some me time, maybe come up with a New Year's resolution or two, and hope to start the year strong once we come back from our break.
Yeah, and we're excited here at the center to continue to partner with you in the new year as we move into the second half of the school year and getting that time away, but coming back strong here in the new year to finish out the school year well.
Well, thanks, guys. Very thankful for both of you and doing this podcast, and really excited that we're closing out 2019 with our third podcast, and looking forward to what the future holds in 2020.